This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome. Good to see you all here and there and everywhere on this second day of a new year. So we were here yesterday with for morning Zazen Kai with the Doug and the residents and Jiro and others who came. That was lovely. So we talked about the new year a bit, about how important it is for us as human beings to have these ways of recognizing that we're alive and alive in time. And here at Jikoji, they rang in the new year in the traditional Zen way of doing 108 bows and bells. So we're in a flow of the new year, you could say. New Year is marked by a day and a time. That's in our culture. And different cultures mark it at different times and different days, but every human culture marks the new year, the turnings of the seasons, and the light, the darkness, in some way or other. Sometimes by building great monuments like Stonehenge to be sure they have a record of it and they're remembering to acknowledge where they are as human beings. And our Zen way is to remember by sitting down and getting in touch with who we are as one human being amongst all these wonderful human beings. So we often make resolutions in this culture, or reflections on what our aspirations are, really, what we might want to do differently, or maybe more of, or maybe less of. And I think that's a good thing. It can become sometimes, well, it just can, like anything, can become just a habit. But it is a good thing to reflect about where we are and what our aspirations are. So I often think of one of my favorite Dogen talks, Uji, time being, at around this time of year, and also other markings of the year like the equinoxes and the solstices, because he had a very special and wonderful way of encouraging us to look at time in a different way, to actually be in time in a different way, to be time, really. That's kind of awesome. And he also talks about flow. It's a fairly long talk, and not really one of the short ones, but also not one of the really long ones. And I'm not really going to go into it in great depth, but I wanted to share what the inspiration that I get from thinking about time and, or thinking maybe isn't the right word, but really trying to open myself to what Dogen might be talking about, how to see life and time in a more whole way, a more complete way, perhaps. And one way I do this, and this came up yesterday, in our little discussion after our day of mourning together was to be aware of everything that's around as best we can in each moment. And that's to be aware of the wonder of the world. So that's my New Year's resolution. Every moment there's a wonder. And we shared some of those wonders, those here yesterday, about what being here in this place, Jikoji, what a gift. What a gift. Every moment is really a gift to us. But when you're in a place like this, that's so beautiful and has been a sacred ground for so many centuries, at least as far as we know, there's somewhat of a record here in the stones and in other ways that the native peoples marked the land. Costanoan people, maybe one tribe or another, was right here on this land, not exactly clear. But they were here, and undoubtedly others were here as well, who recognized this, the quality of this place that that encourages us to look around and just see the simple way the wind is going through the trees, as I'm looking at now right outside the window. Or if you're actually here and you have been here, you may remember when we have the rains, the sound of the creek flowing through, the sound of water on rocks. That's really a wonder. And that's deeply refreshing to us. That really goes deep inside us when we actually open our ears, our eyes, all of our senses, including our mind, heart, to the wonderment that's always present for us. Now there's a wonder in the moons that come up. That's also very much a part of Zen and many other religious and spiritual and even cultural practices, to acknowledge the different phases of the moon and how just tuning into that energy, feeling that different within this, as Buddha Shakyamuni said, this 5-fathom-long body, this just one total unit of heart, mind, all the senses. We can feel this energy that's given to us, these gifts that are given to us, when we attune to them, when we become aware of them. So the light and the dark, the moons, the suns, just waking up and going to sleep, just waking to the light and going to sleep in the darkness. What a gift that is, and how that attunes us if we pay attention to the gifts that we have to offer, which are our being in the world with love and compassion. Those are the gifts that each of us carries with us as part of just being a human being, and we can share those. You know, so I mean, the funny thing is, kind of funny, is that we forget this, but we can always remember it at any moment. Sometimes it kind of stuns me when I'm caught in some place of my own in my little world, and then I kind of go, well, wake up in that instant, and it's for an instant, and kind of laugh at myself and say, oh, well, where's your breath? Where's your feet? I mean, we have these touch points, particularly in Buddhist practice. Buddha Dharma has a lot of ways to keep us in touch with this, coming together in a group, going through our simple forms, or more elaborate forms, ceremonies, rituals. All these are beautiful ways to help us. Well, also to help us be at ease in the world, to help us relax, be at ease. And once we are at ease and relaxed, then we can share that with others. Shakyamuni Buddha said, there is no other being whose happiness is more important than your own happiness. We are responsible for our own happiness, and we can help that along the way by simple things like practicing. Maybe that's not so simple for all people, but sitting down with ourselves quietly and letting those periods of quietness unfold, just being with our simple breath body, and whatever our senses are, whether they're uncomfortable or comfortable, blissful, just really being aware of where we are with those. Our relationship with time is pretty conditioned by our cultures, all cultures, even Buddha cultures, Buddha Dharma, the Shakyamuni Buddha culture, and of course Dogen's culture. We all have this way of looking at time. Ours, our particular North American culture, American USA culture, is kind of a speedy culture, but others have different ways of doing it. But it's all a kind of conditioning, that a habit of mind that we have to look at time in a certain way. And Dogen shared with his sanghas, which were men and women, just like us, laymen and women, as well as monks and nuns, what his insights were into what it meant to be human, and in the case of time being, about time. He recognized that we have a complicated and mistaken view of what time is. We think it goes in kind of a linear way, forward and back, the time's arrow of the philosophers. It goes, just in one way, either forward or back, but along a line. And Dogen saw that really blocks, impedes somehow, knowing who we really are and what our reality is. And so we acknowledge the present. That's a big thing that people do in Buddha Dharma practice, and the present moment. But its brevity makes us uneasy, and the fact that we can't measure it makes us uneasy. What is the present? What is being here now? What is that? How long is a mind moment? Dogen says at one point, not in Uji, but in the Genjo Koan, winter does not become spring, and spring does not become summer. So that's kind of a little paradoxical take on our usual way of looking at. Yes, well, now this turn of the seasons, now we're into spring, or now we're into summer. But it doesn't work that way. So what is time? What is our life in time? I think the main thing Dogen has done for me is given me an opportunity to loosen my assumptions about what time is. He offers us all a radical view where all things and all events, including us, and I mean all things, and he goes on about this, exist at the same time without interfering with one another. There's no conflict in this way of time where all things exist together. So when our habits of time are loosened, like this. We have more choice in our thoughts and our actions. When we can, and this happens spontaneously, often momentarily, we can't even really say how long it takes, but we get that we are part of something all total existing at that time, which we don't even know how long that time is, but we know it. We know it in our belly, and we know it in ourselves. We know it in our being. And then we can move from there. We can do something, or say something, or think of something, create something, imagine something, embody our wisdom and compassion in whichever way that comes for us. There are many different ways to be human beings, that we're all individually different. So we each have this opportunity to see for ourselves which way we want to be in this moment now, in this situation, whether it's a difficult one or an easy one or a seemingly ordinary one. So Dogen says, here it says, kind of from memory, at one point he says we are eight arms and three heads in Dogen's metaphor. And so we're kind of always flailing around. This is what I get, we've got all these heads that we're thinking about and how we're doing things. And there's reminds me of that other saying of Zen, don't put a head on your head. But we do that. We just keep adding things on. Three heads and eight arms, just kind of always busy doing stuff like that. So maybe that's a metaphor for when we get angry or upset, or we're just reactive. It's like that. And he also says, you are, and he uses the direct address in this, you are, eight arms and three heads, and you are an 18-foot golden Buddha. You are also an 18-foot golden Buddha at the same time. So that reminds me of Walt Whitman, actually. I contain multitudes. We contain multitudes. I am various as the leaves of grass. So the poets often tune into these moments and remind us. So we're all of it, all the contradictions and all the flowing cosmos. It's all happening. So it's not really necessary to, read Dogen or study Dogen. Dogen and Shakyamuni Buddha from the very beginning, and then through Bodhidharma, Dogen, all the great Zen teachers and all the great Buddhist teachers, said all you have to do is sit down and see for yourself. Sit down and see for yourself. So keeping awake to the moment when we are awake, or maybe even we can do that in our sleep, some people can, that helps us understand our place in time and our place in the world that we act in. And anything that can awaken us when we keep aware, keep open to the unexpected. So many of the Zen stories are about that. The unexpected is when this or that practitioner, monk, or person got it. Like, I was walking along and thinking and doing whatever, and then I tripped over a rock, and I looked down and my foot was bleeding, and that was it. Can be anything in these stories about, awakening stories and Zen masters. So awakening is not a steady state, though. This flow that we're in is continually moving. It's not that we get someplace and get it and then, okay, now we've got it and settle into that habit. It's being aware as much as we can when we can. And then, and not most importantly, that's a gentle awareness. It's not beating ourselves up when we forget to be awake. It's more helpful to kind of laugh at yourself, actually, I've found. So, it's what awakening is, or enlightening ourselves, is widening our vision and seeing how we are part of a whole and how our actions affect the whole, and what are the most loving and kindest actions we can do in this moment, even in the difficult moments, when an action of kindness might be a very firm and strong no. So, we need each other, and of course we couldn't exist. We live completely interconnected from the time, the time of our conception, really. And throughout our lives, we are always connected with other beings. Keeping that in mind as part of our time, we are always connected. And that's why being together and our words matter as our actions do. Our poems and stories, Dharma and Sangha, so that we remember that ordinary reality and luminous reality are the same thing. There's not a difference, really. So that we can see that we have these choices in every moment. So that we can see that we can trust our own nature, as Shakyamuni Buddha did. It wasn't easy, his quote, enlightenment experience or awakening experiences. They were a trajectory that went on from, according to what stories, from the beginning of his life, or at least through his life as a prince, through to the end. And even when he, after his quote, enlightenment experience, he sat down again and again for the rest of his life and kept awakening, kept waking up. Kept trusting his own nature that he could keep on doing this and sharing it with others. So I would like to end with one of Dogen's poems. This is a translation by Shohaku Okamura. Has a really wonderful website of Dogen's poetry, if you're interested in that. And another poem that I wrote for this new year, it's my way of making kind of New Year's resolutions, is to write a gatha, a little short meditation poem. So I'll read that one first. He wrote this after the rains on New Year's Eve day, after many days of rain. Whenever it rains, I vow with all beings to see wells and clover, frogs and floods, oceans and orchids in each raindrop. And Dogen, whether summer or winter, the mountain of Koshi is free from discriminative thinking. It sees equally falling of white snowflakes or roaring thunder. So I thank you very much for your attention, and I look very much forward to hearing what you want to bring into our circle here today, beginning the new year together, beginning again. Thank you.
Nice to see you. Thank you for that. I was struck by your saying about the, it sounds like sort of like a delusion of time being linear, or not only linear, I guess. Is that right? I've recognized for a while, though, it seems like, unlike other languages, in particular the language I've studied a long time, which is visual, that your talk is linear, or words, language is linear. It doesn't work another way. It seems like maybe poetry, but it seems like it goes and then comes to a period and these sounds in between. And so I just was kind of curious about that, because your talk was quite eloquent and penetrating, and yet it's an ongoing theme of mine. I'm suspicious.
Well, you bring up a good point that, yes, language, and as a person who's especially fond of language and writes a lot, so I have noticed that myself. That's one of the many paradoxes of language, and one could say of time, but language has this paradox that it is in a kind of linear form. And some cultures really emphasize that, and some forms of language really emphasize that. Completely oral cultures, from reading about them, which is I'm reading line after line, the completely oral cultures, according to people who study them, anthropologists, have, their language is a little bit more fluid or different than what we could say is the world languages as we know them. But even in the world languages, there are ways of going, like in Chinese or Japanese, configuring the language so that it goes in a different way instead of right to left or left to right and up to down or down to up, So in a way, those languages, particularly, or any kanji sort of languages, more spatial way, one could say. But even space, once we put any word on anything, we have kind of encapsulated it. And yet, it's a great gift of ours. We could, and all humans, as far as we know, have language of one form or another. It's how we recognize our connection and our love in a way. I mean, we don't need language to do that. The baby doesn't need language, to recognize the mother's love. But it is even in small tribal cultures, it's an important way to keep understanding each other and to keep helping each other, even if they're not very complex, in other words, where you have to work with a lot of different things, where language is, you know, very important because of the complexity of so many people and so many things that we have in the world. But it's also how things get done. So it moves, language moves things. And you could say, yes, that movement is also linear in a way, but that's all part of it. But there's this bigger part of it that holds. And I think that's what Dogen is pointing to. This way of time, when we are all things, that holds all the other bits and pieces. So I think that's all I have to say about that. Thank you for bringing that in.
Okay. Hello, Carolyn. So good to see you.
And good to see you, Emily.
I wanted to share about something you just brought up that touched me about what holds everything together. Can you hear me? Is that okay? Can you hear me?
One second. Where the sound? Okay. Sorry, we had a little sound check. Could you repeat what you said? We couldn't hear you. Thank you.
Is this any better, Carolyn? Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can all hear you now, because the rest of the room couldn't hear you, and I could hardly hear you. Yes, we can
a
hear
little
you.
Louder.
Thank you.
I attended a haiku poetry at Jikoji with Donalyn, and she had us write. We did several workshops, and at the end of the year, we gathered all the haiku from all the seasons, winter, spring, summer, and fall. And then on the new year, we had let go of all the former poems and tried to extrapolate just the essence of those poems. And there are special words for each season. And also they're called Kigo. And then there's Kigo just for the new year. So there's actually a fifth season. And then we threw away the poems, and then some of them, and then took the meaning of those and brought it together for the new year into a haiku, and maybe more than one. But I felt like that held it together for me, just the way that you were sharing. That there's something bigger beyond all the individual seasons. There's even this greater bringing it all together. The question that came up for me was the hardship of letting go. It's easy to stay awake when there's no hardship. But if you have a loss or, So the eye to look at what is being let go of, and then putting that in that wholeness again. I just wondered if we could speak to that. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for sharing that story of the beautiful haiku. Yes, haiku is a wonderful medium for exploring. Well, any form of poetry can be that. So, loss, yes. So anytime we get caught in or feel deeply, let's say, it doesn't have to be that we're caught in it, but we tend to easily get caught in it. But it first starts with feeling deeply a sense of loss or a sense of anger, a sense of hurt, a sense of something's not right, the difficult stuff, all the difficult stuff, something in our work, something in our family, we've lost our sister, we've lost our mother, or we're, you know, whatever it might be, putting it in the larger picture. I've found most helpful is not taking it personally. So it's a kind of the not self. It's touching into that where it's not your, it's not my loss. It's and also for me that's really that really connects me to everyone else. Everyone is feeling this. Everyone has gone through it or will go through it. Whatever it is, whatever the loss is, whatever the situation is, we all just go through it. So no steady state there either. I mean, we are enlightened. We are enlightened. We are enlightening. We are in the flow, and we'll just keep on going through it. So recognizing our whole human nature. Some of Dogen's other talks, I can't think of one right in this moment, but maybe it'll come to me in a second, where he's much more cranky. You know, he is obviously not, he's giving a sermon and not really having a great time. So he's human, you know, he's just, and he's also, you know, he's also brilliant and generous, very, very generous soul to share all of what he did with us. So, and using language, it's one reason I love Dogen is because he plays with language and uses it in a way that shows we don't have to get caught in the linear. So that's all I could really say about that. Thank you, Emma.
I was listening to the Diamond Sutra in a loop last night, and like, and there were like two things that I really got out of it, and one of them was where the Buddha, so in the Diamond Sutra, the Buddha is in Jeddah Grove in Shravasti, and there's like 1,200 monks, and then there's this venerated monk Subhuti. He asks them this question about about attaining the unsurpassed perfect wisdom, and he says wonderful things about it. He says that there's no such thing as unsurpassed perfect wisdom. There's no such thing as unsurpassed perfect mind. But he says, and so he kind of like, he talks about boundlessness in a way. And then like one thing that I got out of it was that in the sutra, Buddha says that our lives have to be looked at as if they are dew drops in the morning, or they are lightning in a summer day, or they are bubbles in a stream, and we should develop a mind which is not affected by the sounds and the sights and the tastes and the odors. And so he talks about developing that mind which is untouched by the senses, and that's wonderful to dwell upon. And then we chanted the Heart Sutra, and there too we chant boundlessness, nature, which has no eyes, no ears, no tongue, all of that. And yet when we practice, and both seem right, but yet when we practice to be in the present moment, to hear the sounds, to feel the touch, to be aware of everything.
And so how do we look at these two things?
Thank you. It's a good question. How do you put those two things together? How do we put any paradoxes together? How do we put that we are, we and other creatures as well, are creatures of great compassion and kindness, and yet we're also murderous and do very harmful things. I mean, and so human life is not, it's hard to really reduce it to a set of anything. That's why we have so many words. I mean, Buddhism is, well, every major religion is, but Buddhism has lots and lots and lots of words, encyclopedias full. It's a constant renewal, so that is being in the moment. And we can't just jump conceptually to even beautiful poetry or beautiful philosophy that, yes, we just have to develop a mind. And it's, I heard you say it's, they're both are true or seem true to you. They both seem true. And I think it is true that they're both true. But we can't really jump from saying, well, it's all we have to do is train our mind to just know, you know, no sound, no taste, no touch, no, you know. We can't really jump there unless we've gone through and know deeply with our whole really body. I mean, in talking the energetic body, that what our senses are, how they affect us. And then that's why we sit down and practice. Those things become clear then, they come together, that we can hold both. And that's how really taking the big compassion of being compassionate for those who do evil things, who do harmful things. How do we do that? So that's a koan, and that's a koan we're all working with. Thank you. Susan.
Thank you so much for this talk that is opening many doors today. Finding it insightful and helpful. I'm stuck on climate and weather and season change. So when you said that, you know, spring and doesn't really become summer, summer doesn't really become fall, I started looking at that. And what's striking me is that as the human need to mark time change, equinox, solstice, over time, over millennium, occurs, we are now, as a whole planet, experiencing climate and weather and seasons differently. So we have the CZU fire in August, but now we're having the fires in Denver in December and January. Those concepts of, you know, this lovely little seed is planted and then it's going to grow at just the right time and then it will bloom just when we expect it every year, year after year after year. That's not happening anymore for us. So how do we as humans put together that paradox and that yes and or no, because it's new. It's new for the species. And that's on my mind this morning as we turn the page to the new year. And so it was very helpful for you too. What I saw was this Enzo. My son is an artist. He gave me a beautiful Enzo yesterday for my birthday, a watercolor. And when you said, you know, that we need to see the whole and the particulars inside it. That's what I heard from you, in a way that will reassure us that those particulars are going to keep occurring and that the whole will continue to revive itself and still present us with wholeness. How else are we going to keep going with all of this challenge as a planet? So thank you.
Thank you very much, Susan. Dogen goes on in Uchi, and he gets very cosmic. And actually, we touched on that a little bit yesterday too, about how we've been knowing this and doing this as humans, this sitting down in some form of knowing who we are, for a very long time. And even knowing now, we don't know everything though. We don't know everything. So that's one way that I, you know, because that's one way that I reassure myself, to use your phrase, in this larger picture, we haven't seen it before. So it's something new, the climate crisis. And it does, you know, it's big. It's a big loss for us because we haven't experienced it before, but we know it's a loss. And how do we hold that and keep going instead of going into despair and paralysis and not doing anything? And each of us maybe will find another, each of our own way, our way to do it, in different ways, other ways, as we need to move through this. But we don't know the whole picture. And many people are doing things that actually in little corners of the world that are making sure those little seeds go on for the next generation and for the next, you know. And if they don't, if those particular seeds don't, something is going on in the very larger picture. As Doug mentioned yesterday when we were on this kind of subject of, well, the big picture, how long, you know, the cosmos is out there, that is all going on. The scientists that I've read, and I don't read deeply, but widely, that, you know, this is all going to come to an end too. So what does that mean? You know, the whole, everything is going to implode, or then there are different views on that, of course, but so how do we hold it? That's your big question. And I think it's everyone's question. How do we? For me, Buddha Dharma has been a very embodying and an empowering answer to that question. So I do have great trust in the Dharma, in the widest sense of Dharma, that I don't know everything, and my little life will end, and the lives of everyone I know, if they haven't already ended, they will end. And yet, how do I go on? I do think the Dharma, and it's, I'm for me, it's been Buddha Dharma, particularly after other explorations, but also in Asian worldview or philosophy, Taoism. But other ways are completely their dharmas too. And I know people who practice other kind of forms, religions, and those are also those can be the way for them. They're just as powerful and rich when people really deeply connect with them as our Dharma, as Buddha Dharma. I'm calling ours because we're here together. Of course, so that's what I could say to that. I don't know if that's a... We each at the end have to find that resource in ourselves, but we all do it. We all have it, otherwise we wouldn't be here. That's we're here. We've shown up and we're doing it. So I thank you very much. I thank everyone very much. I think it's I think we have the Tenzo who's working away for us, and so we will adjourn with saying our vows.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.